Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you want to ask congressional candidates a question for this fall's election, WNYC is partnering with the Personal Democracy Forum in a 10 questions project. Now, you can submit questions through text or video for the candidates in this fall's all-important midterm congressional elections. You can also vote on questions that other people have entered. The top 10 questions will be submitted to the candidates, many of whom have already pledged to answer and post their video responses. So check out the 10 questions feature on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we hope you participate. Now, we count on you, our listeners, for a lot on the Brian Lehrer Show. We've been using the wisdom of this crowd for everything from the price of a gallon of milk to our latest data visualization project, where our listeners contributed the data and then the ways to display it in our Map Your Moves challenge. We'll be unveiling a lot of that next week. It is understandable. In fact, the Map Your Moves data visualization, the infographics, are up on our website right now. Many of them are very beautiful and really interesting in the way these designers have crunched the numbers about where you all have moved over the last 10 years, which 2,000 of you registered with respect to your moves. So you can go check them out right now, and we'll actually talk to the designers about what they learned next week. But you can see those infographics at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And so it's understandable that we would be excited for a new website from the New York City Public Advocates Office, which has been set up to crowdsource a landlord wall of shame, cataloging and mapping reports of dangerous landlord violations that are unfixed and outstanding. New York City Public Advocate Bill de Blasio joins us now to tell us about this latest endeavor and how the people are going to help him be a state-of-the-art advocate. Hey, Bill, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And you want to hear from listeners. You were just telling me off the air. You want to hear what the kinds of violations they're facing in their buildings?
Yeah, we need to find where these buildings are and what's happening. We know a lot of them have had no heat and hot water in winter. They've had ceilings falling in, floors falling in, mold that's at a dangerous level in terms of health. We need to know where the buildings are to help the city do the enforcement it should do, but also to put pressure on the landlords to actually fix these conditions.
All right. And we'll get to discussion about how the site was built. But since the site is up and running, let's talk about the landlords at the top of your list. Mm. And listeners, if you do want to talk about the violations in your building and ask the public advocate what can be done about it if your landlord has been unresponsive, 212-433-WNYC. Call us up right now, 212-433-9692. Top of the list, number one in terms of violations or in terms of yeah, total infractions. We have a landlord by the name of Alan Fine, who owns 15. Is this his address or is this his building? I guess this is the building, right? 1553 Bryant Avenue.
That's right, the building.
That's in Manhattan, I guess. 1,049 violations.
It's unbelievable. One building. And again, these are not minor matters. A lot of these are direct health and safety problems.
62 apartments in that building.
Yep. And this is the guy who some of the other members of the media went and tracked down at his lovely suburban estate. And he claimed that it wasn't entirely his building. Look, here's the law. Any partner in a building, any co-owner, is equally responsible with the others for these repairs. These are violations of the law. And what's scary here, Brian, is that these owners basically game the system. They get the violations. They ignore them. There's really not much of a mechanism for forcing payment. And so the tenants continue to suffer. We want to change that equation by making it so difficult, so publicly shaming, that these landlords have to act. And it also forces the government to get into gear in terms of actually following through on the violations.
Do you know of those 1,049 violations, what they tended to be?
If it's like, I don't know, that building, if it's like the others, a lot of them are, for example, again, you have time and time again the heat and hot water. That's the number one problem in the cold months. In fact, landlord complaints, building complaints are the number one reason people call 311 at this point in our history. 350,000 such calls last year to 311, overwhelmingly about heat and hot water.
Used to be noise, didn't it?
It used to be noise. That's right. And what's happened is, for some of the landlords, they literally think, I won't provide the heat and hot water. I'll just take the violations, and I won't pay all of them anyway, and it's just better economics, which is a pretty sick equation if you think about it.
Maybe that's another map you could make, mapping 311 calls.
Exactly.
And seeing from where people feel the need to call the government for
that's
services.
I'm going to borrow that idea.
You may have it. Consider
we'll
it a donation.
We'll attribute it to you.
And I'll attribute it to my producer, Alan Smith, who came up with it. Yeah. Sean Curry, landlord at 2710 Bainbridge Avenue, Northwest Bronx. Total 1,048, one less violation than the 1553 Bryan Avenue building. Again, assuming that we just assume it's the same things?
It's that same range traditionally, and he's an interesting example because the shaming process already started to affect him. When folks in the media reached out to him, he got apparently quite flustered and said he was committed to making repairs right away. And we've seen this. It's interesting. Just since Monday, we've had literally tens of thousands of hits on our website. We've had 70 individuals open up new cases with us trying to get specific repairs made in their apartments. We've had a landlord in Bushwick who started making repairs, a landlord in the Lower East Side, this gentleman you mentioned. So I don't pretend for a moment that they're all going to be enlightened overnight by this process. I think some of them are going to feel they have to move. Others are going to see you can't operate in the shadows anymore if there's this amount of pinpointing of the problem and publicizing of the problem.
Beth in Flatbush, you're on WNYC with public advocate Bill de Blasio. Hello.
Hi. My comment is about the fact that it's so difficult for us as tenants to get anything done. I've been to court with my landlord previously, and now he, in fact, has open violations that he claimed were fixed. Inspector came in, saw they were not, and as egregious as no smoke detector in my apartment building. That's supposed to be fixed within 30 days. It's been months. What? And yet, I think, too, he would rather just get the fines. I don't understand it. We're taking him to court.
And you should, and we want to help. And, Beth, that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head. It's a cynical process where they say, I'd rather take the fine. In many cases, they bargain down the fine in court. Just to say, please contact my office. It's www.advocate.nyc.gov or 212-669-7200. That's an exact example of the kind of thing where we want to put the pressure on to either get the solution or make the penalty process work so this landlord feels it.
Beth, good luck. And she's calling from Flatbush, which is pretty well represented
yes.
on your map. In fact, as I look at the map, and listeners, when you go to the Public Advocate's website, you will see this very clearly. You can get there through our page. You can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and click through to this map. But almost every one of these worst landlords with the buildings with the most violations, or the buildings themselves, I guess, are above 110th Street in yep. Manhattan. And they're out into Brooklyn.
That's right, central Brooklyn and southern part of the Bronx. It's the classic areas of the city that have many low-income residents. And what's happened is the landlords think that these residents won't be organized. And this is another part of putting this out publicly, to use it as an organizing tool, to work with tenants, to empower them. That's another piece of the strategy.
Here is a landlord calling in who I think doesn't like the tone of this. Ronald, you're on WNYC.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, I'm a small-time landlord. I only own, as residentially, a 20-family unit in East Flatbush. But I will tell you, I have very few violations on the building. I am constantly fighting certain tenants in court that have been evicted and put back into the apartment. They break things purposely. Every time they don't show up in court. You know what? I know that these tenants do not have to pay if there are violations in their apartments and things. They hold back. I make sure my best to get in there. So what they do is that we have appointments through the court system. They don't show up. They got to send a liaison on down there. Cost me money through the nose. And there's no recourse, really. I just got to keep paying the lawyers.
Well, Ronald, let me jump in just for time. Assuming that you are the good landlord that you say you are,
yes.
What do you think when you hear about these worst landlords or these landlords labeled the worst? Do you think the government should be leaving these people alone, or do you think
I'm glad I'm not like them? No. I'm not like them at all. I look at this one building that I have as an investment. I want to take care of it. And people that, you know, who are like that, who don't care, I don't know how they collect their rent with all those violations. That's the truth.
Ronald, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Right.
So do you need to do another project on the worst tenants in New York City?
Well, look, Ronald's right. It's a two-way street. And the fact is we found 155 landlords who had these extraordinary level of violations. Most landlords, of course, are doing their job. Clearly, there are some tenants who are not doing the right thing as well. So we want to fix problems, and it's not a one-way street. Housing court, I think Ronald makes a point, housing court needs a lot of reform in and of itself. It's incredibly unwieldy for all sides.
Ben in Carroll Gardens, you're on WNYC. Everybody in Brooklyn wants to talk housing today. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how you doing? I grew up in New York City and New Jersey, and I thought I had a good understanding of landlord-tenant relations. Then for the first 6 years of my adult life, I actually lived in Japan, moved over there, and lived in the big city. And I was shocked when I moved back here as an adult at the age of 27, I think, and started living with landlords in this city. It is so terrible. I mean, landlords treat tenants so horribly in New York.
You think there's a culture
like that? It doesn't have to be like that.
That's right. Do you think it's a culture?
Some kind of.
Do you think it's based on your Japan experience, Ben? Do you think it's a cultural difference, or is it an economic incentive difference? Any idea?
I think, you know, I'm not really too sure. I think it is cultural. I just think we're not in this country too often. We're taught just capitalism all the time, and there's no kind of underlining. Ethics or morals that are really taught to us in general, especially the people I think that tend to end up being landlords, because those are people I think in New York that didn't necessarily go to school for economics or something, but they more through family or that kind of a link ended up being landlords, so didn't perhaps have any kind of schooling as to how you should maybe treat a tenant.
Ben, I'm going to leave it there. And certainly a lot of business people, including a lot of landlords who are good people, will think that's a very broad brush that he was painting with. But I don't know.
He gets to a point. Ben's pointing out something that we have to be honest about. A lot of the landlords have a very different life experience than the people who are in their buildings. And this example of Mr. Fine, the first one you raised, you know, who lives in the suburbs and the folks in his building are living effectively in squalor. They may live, you know, 20 miles apart, but they're entirely different realities. So one of the interesting things, I mean, Japan is a fairly homogeneous society. There may be more of a sense between landlord and tenant of some shared experience. But we have a problem here that a lot of landlords think, a lot of these bad landlords think that whatever happens to their tenants, I'm not sure to even think about it in the terms of humanity they should.
Let me get one more call in here. Janet in Manhattan, we have about a minute for you. Hi.
Yes, hi. There's a new thing that's been around. Landlords have a list of tenants who bring them to court, so that when a tenant wants to rent an apartment, they look up this list, and if they're on the list, they will not rent an apartment.
Tenants who have sued landlords blacklist. Do you know that exists?
I had heard rumors, and it's obviously deeply troubling, and it's something we'd want to work on as well. I mean, that I can only imagine the legal and moral problems with such a blacklist.
Janet, good luck. So before you go, public advocate Bill de Blasio, what kind of teeth are you hoping this worst landlord site will develop?
I think you start with the shame, and some of them move. Some of the worst landlords move because of that. I think it helps the city focus on where the biggest problems are. The next step is to go for legislative fixes in Albany to increase the penalties and make them more automatic. I always say, you or I get a parking ticket, we have to pay it. There's real consequences. Landlords, the bad landlords, don't have that reality with their violations. That has to change with a new law in Albany.
And last thing, we have a New York primary coming up in about a week and a half. Coming up next hour, we'll be talking to the New York State Senate Majority Leader, Pedro Espada, and his challenger, Gustavo Rivera, in the Bronx. I know you, like almost every other elected Democratic official, is supporting Rivera in that primary. Right. Who else are you endorsing that you feel really strongly about in the primaries?
Absolutely, Gustavo Rivera. I'm supporting Adriano Espaillat for state senate. I'm supporting Eric Schneiderman for attorney general. And I think that job is going to be increasingly important with everything that's happened on Wall Street, et cetera. I think Eric's the right fit. Francisco Moya out in the Queens Assembly District versus Hiram Montserrat. Those are some of the examples.
All right. We leave it there with New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how being a Vietnamese American is unique. Stay with us.